Hey idiots, I'm Jessica Michelle Singleton. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I'm also an idiot sometimes. Aren't we all? If you love to laugh as much as you love to learn about new people, I have a podcast for you called Hey Idiots. It's 50% hilarity, 50% curiosity, and 100% insanity. My guests include experts in their field, sometimes just other stand-up comedian friends, and occasionally absolutely insane people who have somehow convinced me they're knowledgeable about a topic. If you're into expanding your mind or just laughing out loud, check out the Hey Idiots podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Alrighty, so we each have a Four Loko and we're ready to talk about books.
Woo!
I have a Sour Apple Four Loko, which is 13.9% alcohol by volume. And how many ounces is this thing?
That looks like a 24.
The serving size is 5 fluid ounces, and this thing comes in a gigantic fucking can.
5 fluid ounces?
Read the
back. What are the nutrition facts?
Oh, what are the? It just says alcohol per serving.
It just says alcohol.
We all know the nutritional situation of a Four Loko. Yeah. So these are gigantic cans. What are these?
So the serving size per container is 4¾. 4¾ what?
Oh, it's 4¼.
Of 5 mL.
Yeah,
is it, is it a 24-ounce can?
It is a 24-ounce can by that math. Yeah. Okay.
So 24-ounce can at 13.9%. How many fluid ounces?
Welcome to the math podcast.
We are milliliter.
God, now we're going.
It's a can of thick wine.
It's thick wine.
It's thick. It's like 2, if not 3 glasses, probably 3 glasses of wine. I am drinking, Bridget, I don't remember what flavor, but it was a Warheads.
The Warhead Special.
So this is the Warhead Special Four Loko, which is, in case you're wondering, not sour. So luckily I had citric acid, just pure citric acid used for coating gummy worms and cleaning sinks. And I put a few teaspoons of that in there. So now it is probably a certified bioweapon.
It also kind of mentosed on you. It foamed up pretty good.
For anyone trying this at home, number one, don't. But if you insist, don't do it in the can.
Yeah.
You'll make a bit of a mess.
We're doing this under the eyes of a trained medical professional. Sure, don't shake your heads. We are.
I was just looking around to think which one of us might qualify. Probably Bridget.
Honestly, probably, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like between Bridget and Mason, I think we all would have enough weird specialized knowledge to weirdly survive most things.
I think Bridget would know what to do and Mason would just be willing to trach us.
No, Mason wouldn't. I would be willing to trach us. Mason would also, Bridget would know what to
Mason
do.
Mason
would know
with us.
How to do it. And I would do it. I have like no weak stomach when it comes to stuff like that. Mason kind of does.
Oh, I love medical stuff.
Me too. If I could be in a surgery theater at any time, I would be.
Talking about knowing what to do, there was a 2-year period there. I think I might have talked on this on a previous episode, but if not, there was a 2-year period there where 3 of my relatives lost digits.
I don't think we've talked about this yet.
So when my dad, like a part of a tractor landed on his finger, and it came off.
How much of it?
Like this much.
Just the top, so above the
and
first knuckle.
And he taped it back on. He had to pull it. Oh.
You going to be okay?
Are you going to be okay?
Oh, I'm fine. Sorry. I was totally in my own thing. Oh,
okay.
And then I heard my name, and so I came out, and I was very confused. And so I was like, oh, I'll just go back to this, but I couldn't help but listen to this story.
Okay, so
don't mind me. I'll be fine.
I'm trying not to make Brooke's husband, Mason, who's in the room with us working on his own stuff, throw up. But so a tractor landed, cut off from here up of my dad's finger. And he said he had to like pull it up like a popsicle because he had a glove on. Mm-hmm. So he had to pull the part of the finger up like. And then he taped it back on with electric tape.
Nice. Good choice.
And then my oldest sister was like, you have to go to the hospital when she found out. So he went to the hospital and the hospital was like, it's growing back together, so just take these antibiotics and keep doing what you're doing.
And he's like, I think it's so interesting.
He's like, now I got a bill.
When clearly.
And then my sister, she got into a lawnmower accident, and it's like Verizon Wireless raising the bar.
Yeah.
It cut off all these fingers. It
actually, like a waterfall bang.
It actually only cut off from here up, but then she got an infection. When, because she got really sick and she went back to the hospital and they undid the stitches and grass fell out and my aunt passed out that was with her. So she lost more of those fingers. And then I had a baby cousin lose his thumb at work. And this was all in a 2-year period.
So you're just like, I thought people losing limb would be way more of a thing, but I just see I wasn't hanging out with the right people.
You weren't born into the right family. Yeah. But I told an Uber driver this story one time while I was drunk. I'm a little bit tipsy right now. And
Each had some Four Loko, which means we're there.
When I got out of the car, the Uber driver was like, oh, ma'am, it was great driving you here. Please don't lose any digits. And I just really loved that of him. I honestly become best friends with every Uber driver I've ever met.
Oh, yeah. I like to sit in the front seat. That's sort of my flex.
I always sit in the front seat.
Like, everybody's like, we shouldn't sit in the front seat. I'm like, move. And then I'm like, hi.
I want to sit in the front seat. I want them to play their own music so I can know what they like.
Yeah.
And then I like to talk about.
I like the long-haul airport guys, you know, because they're always like really pumped to tell you. I've only had one experience in a Lyft where I was like, this is it for me. This is the most dangerous game. If I don't please this guy, I'm not surviving this.
Yeah.
Every other experience has been fine.
Yeah. Not to say that people don't have terrible Uber and Lyft experiences.
For sure.
But I have just become best friends with almost every Uber driver I've ever had. Anyway.
This is a book podcast.
Podcast about losing fingers. A podcast about Uber.
Yeah.
I was an Uber driver.
Were you?
Yeah.
I didn't really have that many interesting experiences, though. Yeah.
Did anybody ever throw up in your vehicle?
No, there were a couple of times when I was worried about it, but it never happened.
When I threw up all over myself in Chicago, it began in Demetrius's Uber. It was a Lyft, thank God, because Uber charges more. Mm. It was still $175 and they direct debit it from your account.
Yeah.
Thank God it was there. I threw up all over myself. So I think it's really weird that he made it about him. I was still blackout drunk, and I emailed customer service for Lyft, and I was like, I think Demetrius is sort of exaggerating about what happened today.
You probably got to it before he did, and they're like, oh, this is definitely suspicious.
I actually didn't get to it before he did, and he did have photos, and there was like a small amount of vomit, but I think that we can all agree, not $175 worth.
Whose job is it to look at the pictures of vomit to... to confirm that this is justified or not.
Here was my thing. It's not that Demetrius didn't really deserve the $175. The problem is we were like 5 minutes into my ride. So he didn't know what to do. And I, a drunk woman who had just thrown up all over herself because I drank a jug of Carlo Rossi sitting down, had to go, don't worry, I'll handle this because I'm conditioned to take care of men. I leave. I had to walk 5 miles. I understand that Demetrius had a bad night, but I was walking back to an apartment I'd never been to meet a person I did not know. And then I was like, hi. And she had to let me in a 15 floor walk up or some shit. And then I just had to shower and trust that we were best friends now. So I really think that if Demetrius was going to make such a stink about me throwing up again, mostly on myself, he could have driven me to the place I was going.
I was going to say, those scent bombs for cars only cost $7 at Walmart, and I've had tons of friends throw up in my car before. I've thrown up while driving a lot because I used to have a hole in my esophagus, so just anything would just kind of set me off to vomit.
Well, we've got a surprise here. We've got on the phone Demetrius from Chicago.
Honestly, I would like to have words with Demetrius because here's my second thing. I know that this isn't a podcast.
This is now a call-in podcast.
About Chicago Lyft drivers. But why does every time I call a Lyft in Chicago, does the driver call me and say, where are you? Do I sound like I fucking know? How the fuck do I know? I am a drunk woman in the middle. Chicago is the biggest city I have ever been to in my life.
We've been to New York together.
Yeah, but New York makes sense. Chicago is obscenely, surprisingly sprawling.
Chicago makes so much more sense than New York.
When you're in New York is like big, but it's like, no one is like, do you know where you are? You don't. In Chicago, they're like, tell me where you are. I'm like, I know that you have GPS. I just don't know why I have to tell you what. They're like, how do I get there? I'm like, if I knew how to get to where I was, I just don't think we'd be in this situation right now where I'm calling a $68 Lyft in the middle of Chicago. I just don't understand why this is happening.
You think if I knew how to use the train, I'd be paying $65?
You think for a fucking second, if I could in any other way be where I am, that I would be calling you, Demetrius? And then you get in his car. He drives like a fucking maniac, even though Chicago's just a big new circle road. And he's like, oh, it's weird that you threw up. I'm like, is it fucking weird? You're driving like a psychopath. I've had 9 gallons of wine. I get car sick sober. That's all I have to say. Not really. I have more to say, but that's all I have to say right now about Chicago Lyft and Uber drivers.
Oh, Demetrius hung up. So we're
I bet he fucking did.
My chair is very, so if you hear that, no, you didn't. So I, Bridget, we didn't introduce ourselves. We just went right into it. I'm Bridget, and I'm going to be talking about a book to Brooke and Ian.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too.
So far, they have each told
We've agreed to do this to each other.
Yes.
This is what we do when we get together and do this.
It's kind of like vomiting into each other's mouths, like baby bird style.
Oh, yeah.
And we all just signed up for it.
We did.
So, also, before we get into it, I wanted to give you all an update. On the first episode, we did discuss that Ian and Brooke like to listen to books, and I only like to read them. I started listening to an audiobook this week.
Whoa, okay.
So if it goes well, then maybe in several episodes from now, I'll be telling you all about that book. Maybe. This one isn't about piss. The book that I'm listening to right now.
It's only a mild disappointment.
You haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah.
Honestly, that could be the fucking
truth. I feel like you
just
attract the piss books. Like, it's in there. You just haven't gotten to it yet.
And as an update that's similar, I, Brooke, who used to read physical books and then went to college and had an extreme burnout and could not read anymore, started reading a physical book, one that Ian talked about on the show. So
our
halfway
first
through.
Episode.
I'm halfway through now. It is.
Oh, nice.
There is so much more to
There's
it.
So much more, yeah.
There is so much more. I keep telling Mason about it and he's like, what?
I feel like people are going to complain that we give a lot away in this podcast, but in that book in particular, there was bare minimum.
Also, like, I don't know if anyone who's listening to this and thinks we might give a lot away has ever seen a movie before that's based on a book and said, wow, they did such a bad job covering everything that happened in the book. Books are long.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of space for stuff to happen. So I would highly recommend that anybody who's listened to our episode on Night Film read the book.
And
I'm
also
not going to say anything else about it, but it's really good.
Speaking of like books, if you guys have suggestions for books that you want us to read, you should send those to us because I finished my next book, not the one we're recording a bunch of these at the same time. So not one that I'm doing today, but the one I'm doing next time we get together. And I need suggestions. I need more books. So let us know.
Yeah. The whole shtick of the podcast is that Ian and I like to read horror books, thrillers, mysteries. I think we're along that vein. And Brooke, even though she has been the narrator for our fictional horror podcast for a long time, she prefers romance.
But I also like thrillers. So
thrillers are, I feel like, the in-between of
horror and romance.
Horror
is
and
a thriller.
Romance. Yeah.
So, yeah, send us any books you think we would like, and we'll definitely check them out.
And if we don't like them, and we talk about how we don't like them when we hurt your feelings, we're so sorry.
But also, if we talk about that we don't like them, that means, like, we're paying attention.
Yeah.
Also, anything that we don't like or isn't our favorite book, like, it's still a book. Somebody wrote a book, and that's a huge deal. So we're never going to be that critical because someone actually put a book together.
Yeah.
That is true. So for my book today, we start out by showing the covers, judging a book by its cover. Brooke, would you read this book?
The cover's super evocative. So should I describe it?
Yes.
I see like half of a woman's face and then horns and then a stamp of approval that you would see on like a leg of prosciutto or a cheese. That makes me excited.
I agree that the book cover looks like Brooke described it. I think she did a great job describing
that. Do you all think you would read this?
I would probably read it. I have a weird, I don't know why, but I have a weird thing with book covers that are photographs.
Yeah. So, that actually doesn't look entirely different to the cover of Night Film.
Right, yeah. So the bottom half of the face is a woman's face, and the top half is sort of the silhouette, a red silhouette of like bull's horns.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I like it. I like the vibe of it. I like the broodiness of it.
Okay, out of how many cutlets do you all rate this book cover?
Out of however many other cutlets?
Yeah.
I would say...
Wait, how much alcohol is in a Four Loko?
24 ounces.
How many Lokos do you rate this cover?
Out of 24?
Yeah. Forget the cutlets thing. I was trying to remain on theme, but the theme is Four Loko.
Yeah, I would say out of 24 Lokos, I would give that cover a 23. I think it's a pretty evocative... It's evocative is the right word because sexy is the wrong word. It's like how awesome doesn't mean great. Yeah. I feel like that is a cover that makes me want to know more.
Okay.
How many Lokos?
I'm so glad we changed it because I don't know what a cutlet is. I would give it like, is it 24 ounces is what we're going for? 24 ounce or is it?
24 Lokos is the total amount.
I'm sorry, 24 Lokos
20,
or 24
24
Lokos.
The number.
24 the number Lokos.
Got it.
So how many Lokos is the cover?
I think the cover is like 18 Lokos for me.
Ooh. Okay, so we have 23 Lokos and 18 Lokos. So Brooke, write that down on the table of table of notes.
It's a cool little whiteboard table we've got over here.
It is really neat.
I know, it's handy.
This book is called Tender as the Flesh.
Really quick, Bridget, I'm curious. How many Lokos would you rate it, having been the person who read it?
For the cover of it, to get me intrigued, like to bring me in, I would say 24 out of 24. But the book cover was not what got me interested in this book. This book, and we're going to try to keep the books a couple years old so that way we're not spoiling a lot of things. It's like The Sixth Sense, you should know by now.
Yeah, so like at least not super recent.
Not super recent. We could read some recent books, but we're going to try to keep it a little older. So this book is like from 2018, but in 2020, it became really popular on TikTok when I got on TikTok. And that's when I read it. And yeah, we've been talking for a little bit. So we're going to head on to our fantastic advertisements, and then I'm going to tell you all about the book that had me staring at my ceiling for an hour.
Woo!
Do we think it's going to be more food boxes?
I think it's probably at least one food box.
Probably one food box. I think there's going to be a mattress in there.
Ooh, yeah.
What if it was a mattress that ordered your food for you?
Like a smart mattress?
Yeah, Sleep Number, but smart house.
Yeah, yeah. Smart mattresses are coming. Oof. Didn't like the way those two things happened together.
I'm honestly, there's this thing, and I don't know what it is, but it's some sci-fi thing that somebody told me about and I didn't read, where the concept is that like the last human died of natural causes happily after the robots took over. That's fine. I'm ready for that. Like everything just gets taken over slowly over time. And then you're just like, the end.
And those robots are our advertisers. Enjoy those.
Enjoy our robot overlords.
Alrighty. And we are back from that lovely advertisement.
I love eating and sleeping unrelatedly.
I love robots. I think robots are great.
I have no problems with them.
Yeah.
I liked those little robot dogs that you could buy back in the day. I don't know if I had one. I don't think I did, but they looked really cool.
I had rich friends that had them. They were a lot less creepy than the babies that like ate and chat.
Never understood those dolls.
You're like, oh. Yeah.
Oh, this is a job. This is a job now.
It was sort of a status symbol. You were like, I'm not like a poor mommy with a baby that doesn't shit. You're like, I'm like a rich mommy and my baby eats and shits. So
I never had the one that ate and shat.
I never had one, but my friends had one that I was peed. Like, the peeing ones were a mood.
Yeah. Because literally you just put water in them and it had a hole.
I knew it. We'd make it back to piss.
Always this is the Piss Kink podcast.
The Piss Kink podcast would be a real pop filter phenomenon.
See, I think the Piss Kink podcast should be the name of our band whenever this doesn't work out.
Oh my God. Have to switch to that. The Piss Kink experience.
I love it.
I would be a part of the Piss Kink podcast as a band. I'm learning drums.
It would be cool to name your band a podcast.
That would be really funny.
We're going to do it, so don't take our idea. I hope you didn't listen in.
Yeah. Okay. We'll know it was you.
So, Tender is the Flesh by Agustina Bastarrica. Fantastic book. I'm not going to be giving everything away. We're going to censor some things that I think if you want to read the book, you probably won't want. You can find the uncensored version. We're going to have that available to you if you don't want to bother reading it. But I do highly recommend reading this book because holy fuck, my girl Agustina is a fantastic writer. And I will be explaining why she is. Because she had me in the story.
Mm-hmm.
I doubted her a little bit on some of the character stuff, but she just... And I was like, yep, girl, I get it. I think that she writes about men in a really cool way.
I love it when a woman writes men, good or bad.
Yeah. Because sometimes you have like, which I mean, we have Ian to write about women for our fiction podcast, and he does a pretty good job, but we've seen some of the bad that can come from men writing about women.
The trick to men writing women, in my opinion, is you just write yourself, right?
Write people.
And then don't get yourself into situations that you don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know what it feels like to be a woman who is discriminated against on the job. That probably won't appear in my stories.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to get that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or I'm going to run it by you guys.
Yeah, you know? You have asked us questions before, like, when you were teenage girls.
Anytime I have to write clothing, I ask you guys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wrote a scene stupidly where several women are, like, comparing outfits. And I'm like, what the fuck do I think I'm doing here?
But I think that's such a good example of, like, it's okay to write things that you don't fully know. It's just probably good to be a person who has friends. Yeah. I would recommend that just for anything you want to do. Writer, existing, get some friends.
Get some friends.
Get some friends.
You're going to write better when you know people.
Yeah. Have a few.
If you've met people before, you'll write better.
So before the ad break, we had talked about in an emergency situation what we would do. And this is not a big spoiler alert. Obviously, you can tell from the cover. This book is about cannibalism, which is really hot right now. There's a lot of stuff about cannibalism in the media. And I remember one time Ian had asked us this, and I think we should get back into it. If we were in a situation, who would we eat first?
I want to point out that I did not ask that question.
You did ask that question.
I'm certain. Did I? I'm certain that was Brooke that asked that question.
Oh, it might have been Brooke that asked
that question. It sounds like me, but I also kind of feel like I would remember. But it does sound like something I would do.
We have been in several situations where that was possible.
That's true.
That was a possible outcome. So
we've been marinating before.
At some point, we've probably all asked that question to the group.
What really matters is our answers.
Brooke, what was yours?
I'm pretty sure I said that we would obviously eat part of Ian first. He's biggest.
Yeah.
Okay, Ian.
I would probably just eat whoever died first. I don't think I would. I don't know. I wouldn't have it in me to. Yeah, I don't know.
The reason why I remember this conversation is because
you ate yourself.
I ate myself. 100%.
Yeah, Bridget would 1,000% eat herself. Yeah,
because sometimes I just like look at my fingers and I'm like, I could take. There's a study that you could apparently bite through your finger with the same amount of energy it takes to bite through a carrot.
I've heard that. Also, you can cut your finger off with the force that it takes to roll up specifically the windows on my Ford Taurus. Not the windows on all cars. Some of them have safeties. Mine doesn't. And I think that's a similar amount of energy in case we ever need it. I imagine in a situation like this, what would happen is that like Ian would do some shit that was like manly or something. And then you'd get like frostbite or something. I imagine we're in like the tundra. And so like one of your arms has to get cut off. Oh, and Bridget's like trying to nibble on one of her fingers. And we're like, stop it. Ian has a dead arm. We're like, we are eating the dead arm. And you're like, well, but I just think I look really good. And we're like, Bridget, we already have a limb. We have to amputate. We're going to eat that first. And we're like having to convince you.
I'm not going to lie. I'm big on like if I have a piece of lip skin fall off.
Oh, for sure. I'm eating, eating that up. Mm-hmm.
I am eating that shit.
I agree that I can 1,000% see me doing something real stupid. Like, there's a reason that women live longer than men.
Yeah.
I used to climb things anytime I drank a little bit. You all know that.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I have a child, I don't do that anymore. But, yeah, real dumb. Real dumb.
All righty. Well, we're going to be talking about cannibalism. Our main character is Marcos.
Okay.
And he lives... I don't think it specifically says, but the author is Argentinian. I believe he lives there. This is a world that is not necessarily post-apocalyptic. The world did not end with most humans dying, but an event happened to where nothing went back to normal.
Mm.
And I also, that event was a infectious virus, which made all animal meat poisonous to humans.
Mm.
And all animal byproducts were poisonous to humans. So obviously, to start out with, they're like, you can't eat the meat, you can't eat the meat. People just didn't eat meat. But after a while, people felt like they were lacking protein. I don't know if maybe in this version of the world, Beyond Burger hadn't been made, but they were just like, we need some meat. She was going crazy. People were cannibalizing. Shit was happening. So the governments of the world decided, and it seems to be a worldwide thing. Excuse me. It seems to be a worldwide thing where eating human meat is legalized. So that's the world that we are living with in Tender is the Flesh. Now, if you are in this world, none of us are vegetarians.
Mm-mm.
I was diagnosed with gout, so I limit the amount of meat I eat now because that actually is part of the problem.
Bridget is a Civil War general. I don't know if you remember that.
Bridget is about 78 years old.
Yep. Yeah, whenever I sidetrack, my three toes were hurting on my left foot, I believe it was, and they were in a lot of pain.
I just want to point out that it sounds like you only have three toes on your left foot.
The three little middle ones, the three babies in the middle. And
now it sounds like maybe you have more than five.
Well, I have 10 in total.
Okay.
But on one foot, there's five. And the three middle ones were in pain. And it was like a lot of pain. But I didn't remember like hitting it or anything. So I was like, oh, my God, what happened? And then I went to the doctor and she's like, have you ever heard of gouty arthritis, also known as gout? And I was like, I need you to be 100% fucking honest with me. Are we being for real right now? And she was like, yeah. So I've limited the amount of meat that I eat. And honestly, found a lot of cool recipes, getting crazy with some vegetables. I don't think that if they were like, hey, no more meat, that I would be like, I gotta fucking eat a person.
I can't imagine that would be my reaction. I cook a lot. Yeah. And also like get over yourself. I don't know. Like, it would be difficult mostly because of the way that we've disrupted our agriculture from top to bottom to the point where we have like an actual environmental dilemma because of the way that we treat everything. Although that problem would be overwhelmingly solved by not producing meat. This is not a pro-veganism podcast because guess what? Having an avocado in the Midwest in March is not normal. But I think there are other solutions.
Yeah.
Before I would eat a person.
You're thinking about this.
No, I don't. I'm trying to think of something interesting to say, and you guys have actually said pretty much everything interesting. I do disagree that Bridget would not feel like she's forced to eat somebody. I think she might do it for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's, I would also eat a person for fun. There was this episode of like Dr. Phil or something. I can't remember what it was, but someone was like, would you eat a person? And this fucking scrunch haired bitch was like, I have. And they were like,
I follow her to hell, I swear.
I know. And she was, her hair was scrunched. And she was like, well, they asked us in medical school, like, would you like to eat flesh? And like, what was I going to say? No. And I'm like, hell yeah, girl. You obviously say yes. They asked. They said, would you like to taste person? And she said, I mean, when's my next ethical chance for this?
Yeah.
All of that to say, I don't think eating people would be particularly pleasant. It's really more of like a do it for the vine type situation. Yeah. Where I'm like, if no one's being like pressed about it, I would imbibe. But if someone's like, do you need to eat people because you just love meat so much? I'd be like, people are not pigs.
Yeah.
Like, girl, you are not the bacon. Well, that's fine.
In this world, they kind of are. So, yeah, this has happened. All of this has happened before the events of the book take place. And now everyone like us is not down to eat human meat. There are a lot of people who are down. A lot of bodies not making it to the embalmer.
That's eating roadkill. Like, that's different.
Yeah, a lot
that's
of
like disease.
People getting murdered and eaten. Like, just a lot of. So, for the governments to get the, you know, sugar helps the medicine go down. So, you are no longer allowed to call it human meat. Which. You didn't call it anything before because it wasn't fucking happening, but you can't call it human meat. It is special meat.
Like when we stop calling things terrorism, they become fine.
Well, you know, and that's why climate change isn't affecting Florida anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Special meat. you can't call it human. So they, Marcos gets into, you know, he said a lot of immigrant populations went missing around that time. So it's he kind of alludes to who was being eaten at this beginning period. So Marcos himself, and this whole period is called, it's a period of transition, so it's called the Transition. Great name.
Brave.
Mm-hmm. Very, yeah. They were super creative, the world's governments coming up with that one.
Realistic.
So Marcos used to work in the animal meat industry, just like his father before him. Now he works in the special meat industry.
Mm.
He is the main character, and he finds the concept of eating human meat or special meat absolutely despicable. He can't talk about it because it's illegal to call cannibalism cannibalism.
But he works in like a slaughterhouse?
Yes.
But he's like... against it.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's one of those things where if he was like, these are humans, like special, they're not special meat, they're humans, cannibalism is wrong, he would be arrested for that.
Could he get like a different job?
You would fucking think.
Yeah.
But no, he hasn't. It's kind of like one of those things. He grew up in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like growing up in a patriarchy and like being really misogynistic and being like, it's what I know.
Yeah. It's what he knows. Is the meat. The meats.
The meat.
He has the meats.
He has them.
So it's the industry he's in. He has a tough time justifying living in a world where certain humans have now been bred as cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And despite his morals on the subject lining up with mine, I can't fucking stand this guy. The whole time I was reading this book the first go around, I was like, This is the only character we are seeing who is outwardly saying that he is anti-eating people and anti-raising people as cattle. And I can't fucking stand the dude. He just gets on my nerves.
Mm-hmm. He sounds really annoying.
Honestly, he does sound completely, just an absolute nightmare of a person. He's like one of those people that are like, I don't know, like,
a philosophy major at a liberal
arts school. He does sound like a philosophy major. Thank you. That's what I was reaching for.
Mm-hmm. That's the vibe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm doing this job that I don't agree with. I could absolutely do something else, but I'm not going. He's Kyrsten Sinema. He's Kyrsten Sinema, right?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, really? Oh, that's that that one Democrat from Arizona that keeps voting. They voted down like a ton of stuff that would have been like, like all the climate change stuff and whatever.
Ah.
Yeah.
Like one of those people who's just like acting like it's harder to be where they are than it is. Like they could leave, but they're like, but everyone can't leave, so I can't. And it's like, girl, you can.
Yeah.
Like you could just not actually slaughter people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's part of why, like, because he doesn't. He might address it in the book. I don't know. But it doesn't feel like he addresses the fact that he is an active cog in this machine. Because it's not like he just works at the slaughterhouse. Mm-hmm. He's one of
the slaughterers.
The highest. No, he's one of the highest ranking people there.
Oh, he's like a boss.
Yeah.
Oh.
So essentially what he does is he works as a middleman.
Classic cuck bullshit.
So he goes between the slaughterhouse that he works at and other businesses that specialize in special meat, like breeding centers and tanneries, etc. Things like that that we don't always think of with like actual animal consumption, but like that are industries that are tied together.
So he's sort of like the worst vegan you've ever met.
Yeah.
He's like a vegan who thinks that eating meat is despicable and anyone who does it is a gross piece of shit. However, he's a high-ranking official in a slaughterhouse.
He's a vegan who is the CEO of Oscar Mayer's. I'm not saying the CEO of Oscar Mayer's is a vegan, but that would be the essentially, maybe not and he's CEO.
Also,
but
he's also a pig. Like, at the same time, he is pork.
Yes. If the owner of Oscar Mayer's was a pig, not the owner, high-ranking person in Oscar Mayer's, was a pig, but also a vegan, but also sold those delicious dogs.
It's serving, like, Charlotte Webb fanfic that I hate. Like, Charlotte Webb Christian fanfic on AO3 that I wish I'd never read.
It's funny because, like, you see all through history, people just get used to bad situations, right? And they just kind of go along with them. And they find reasons to make it work internally, you know, and still feel like a good person. And that's this guy seems like the epitome of that.
Yeah. That is definitely, I think, one of the things that the author does so well in writing this book is you definitely feel a part of this world that a lot of people are doing the things that they do because they feel kind of hopeless.
Mm-hmm. And the author gives you a character who's like not likable to see it through.
But I kept originally reading it. I kept thinking she wanted him to be likable. So I was like, girl, why are we doing this? But anyway, so he's working in the book. We've now gotten into the book. That's the past. This is in the book. He's working with the owner of a breeding center, and who's El Gringo, is what he calls him. And the man describes to Marcos the process of raising what is called a head, which is a person raised for consumption, or a person who is going to be consumed. Special meat. He also describes what is called the first generation pure heads, or FGPs. They are heads that are born and bred in captivity. So it's the first generation. We are now to the point, the first generation of people who were not like chemically altered or anything. They were just born in captivity.
We're to our, so like when this book, the story of this book begins, We're only at our first generation of people that were raised as meat. So everybody else would have been a person first.
Yes.
Which is like pretty horrific.
From my understanding.
It's all pretty horrific, but like that's a pretty interesting place to start.
El Gringo says FGPs are born and bred in captivity. They haven't been genetically modified or given injections to accelerate growth. So this is...
Well, at least they're free range.
Yeah, free range.
They are definitely not free range.
Oh, they're not free range. Oh, what am I thinking? Oh, antibiotic free.
Yes. No, you're also kind of thinking free range because you can actually say that even if someone like even if a chicken lives in like a box.
Oh, really?
Really?
I thought they had to be wandering.
They don't have to be wandering that far.
Oh, damn.
Organic is like kind of a scam.
So that's how far in this world that we are into eating humans. People are now born in captivity. They are not people, but I'm going to call them people because what the fuck?
So presumably maybe, like you've said, they've tried to accelerate growth in previous generations to like mixed results. So kind of like the chickens that are bred to eat until they die. Mm-hmm. So they grow really fast. That's the big chicken breasts you see in the store.
Yes.
These chickens like literally can't stop eating. They've been bred out of knowing when to stop eating. But this FGP meat... These people have been raised up to whatever slaughtering age is without any, like you said, like antibiotic, growth hormone free.
Yeah, they're not like human at all in what is being portrayed.
Like they're not being treated ever at any point in their life as human. And they're also not being accelerated in growth in any way.
Yeah.
So they're fully growing up in some kind of captivity, being treated by as livestock. And this is our first go round.
This is our first gen. So this chapter in the book goes a lot into a lot of detail about the breeding centers. They have male studs who are used to test if female heads are ready for fertilization. Then the other like males fill up plastic containers and the females are artificially inseminated, which this like German guy who's there also working with him, another businessman, he's like, why are they allowed to mount if they're not going to? And then they were like, no, the male studs are, they all have vasectomies. So they just get the girl ready to be impregnated. And
so it's just assault for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But apparently this is so they can have genetic control.
The assault for no reason?
Ish, yeah.
Okay.
So I think this, I don't know if this is true. It might actually be a practice within.
No, it might be, yeah.
Yeah. Within where livestock. Like a male will see if a female's ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one is the one who... whose sperm will be inseminated.
I mean, livestock is almost 100% of the time via insemination.
Yeah.
Sometimes that might be artificial insemination, and sometimes that's just breeding agreements.
Yeah.
I don't know if that pre sort of rendezvous is part of that, but that could be a direct call from livestock. But since we're talking about, like, not people, we'll just call attention to that.
So, yeah, but the German guy, he's like, why are you? And he's like, no, we have complete, El Gringo's like, we have complete genetic control. This is all good. They're clean. And then, you know, once the studs are done, we just send them off to the processing plant.
Mm-hmm.
So, the vocal cords of the meat are removed because, quote, no one wants them to talk because meat doesn't talk. So they communicate with each other the way animals do with grunts and... They can communicate with the people in the breeding center. So they're like, we know if they're hot, we know if they're cold, but they don't talk.
But they're still fully communicating.
Yeah. Impregnated females have no arms and legs. This is done so that way they can't kill their fetuses by ramming themselves against the bar of their cage or purposefully stopping eating.
So presumably that's common.
Yeah.
So cut down to a torso, basically.
Essentially. The female heads are also milked for special milk, you have special meat, special milk, special leather, etc. And it gets into a lot of detail about it. El Gringo also shows some of the heads at the Rural Society. So even in this weird post-animal world, we have 4-H Club.
I bet we fucking do. I bet you in every version of the apocalypse, we have 4-H Club. The future farmers of America are here.
Marianne and Wanda right there.
They were the best of friends.
Do you get that, Ian?
I don't know that reference.
Really?
It's the chicks. That Earl had to die.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know their names.
Oh, it's in the song.
Oh, like, I didn't know that song very well. Yeah.
We'll educate him later.
I recognize that line, but I didn't know. Yeah.
So the chapter ends with Marcos leaving the facility because he says he can't handle El Gringo's voice any longer. He can't bear the way his words accumulate the air.
I have a question.
Yes.
That's why he had to leave?
Yes.
It's not that he couldn't bear, like, the sight of the torso impregnated women or, like, the not people being treated as not people, but it's that this guy was annoying him?
It's that the guy wasn't against what they were talking about in the business.
The guy wasn't virtue signaling like he would like. So that made him uncomfortable, not like the actual injustice.
He was disgusted with the guy.
I know him. I'm pretty sure we went to Transy together. Like,
go Pioneers. So anyway, it shows how much Marcos looks down on people who are in the same business as him.
Mm-hmm.
And the next chapter starts giving us more insight into Marcos's life outside of his business. So a little bit of backstory to fill y'all in. His dad is dying and has dementia. His sister Marissa doesn't help with his father's care, so he looks down on her for multiple reasons. He goes into this big rant about how his sister and her husband named their twin son and daughters after themselves. And he's just disgusted by this. He thinks it's so narcissistic. I think he's going overboard.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, blah,
so
blah, blah, blah.
He's got a problem with, like, juniors? Is that what?
Essentially. It would be like, seems, if Clark and I had Clark and Bridget Jr.
But, would he be having this rant if it was just Clark Jr. and then, like, Daffodil or whatever?
I don't know, the
way that it's presented, because it's very common for men in our world and the way that we understand the world and this author's writing from the perspective of our world to, like, have sons named after fathers, but he thinks it's so narcissistic. Like, it's not like his brother, it's his sister and her husband that did this.
I'm not quite sure, because I know culturally, like, we're more used to men, like, boys being named after their fathers. But I've had some friends, like, because this is a Latin American country that it's based in, of that lineage who, like, have daughters named after mothers.
That's true.
So I think it might be more common. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's as awfully misogynistic as this dude is. I don't know if that's specifically related to that, or as just much as he, like, he hates his sister. And I get she's, like, not helping out with her dad's care, but it seems to just be, like, a deeply rooted, he just thinks that he's better.
You say that they're twins, or
her children are twins.
But they're not twins.
No.
Okay.
This guy would have loved George Foreman.
The grill?
He named all of his kids George.
Oh my God, I forgot that he did that.
Yeah, there's like four or five George Foremans.
And when I said the grill, I meant the human the grill was named after.
Look, we're in this book. Your head's just there.
Yeah.
We know about the grill. Like, we all are about the grill.
So he also has a wife. Marcos has a wife, Cecilia.
Tragic for
Cecilia is staying with her mother.
Makes sense. Hate him.
So their marriage hit issues.
I can't imagine why.
Death of their son, Leo.
I mean, maybe that was just the last straw.
I don't know why. I'm laughing at Brooke's reaction. I'm not laughing at a dead fictional child. Mm. But yeah, their son, Leo, dies. They start, and so she's staying with her mom.
What's her name?
Her name is Cecilia.
Okay.
Cecilia, Marcos, and Leo. His son's room is empty and He walks into the room and looks at it. He hasn't burnt down the cot and the bed and everything yet. He notes that the decor in the nursery back in, like, his day in the normal world would have, like, cute little animals on it. You know how, like, the Noah's Ark stuff, like, all the little baby animals and stuff are on a lot of, you know, pictures and everything? Well, you can't even have animals on that anymore. People don't have pets. Like, there's no cute little animals on there. So now it's flowers and fairies and gnomes.
So you can't have cats in this world?
Cats are all gone.
Would kill myself. The end.
Yeah.
Don't want to be
that's,
here.
That's the most tragic part of this story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would simply not be doing it.
Yeah, so his house is very isolated, going back to not having pets. His house is super isolated. He can't see his neighbors. So he talks about how dogs are used to bark. His dogs used to bark, alerting him that people were coming up the drive. Now it's this oppressive silence. But an employee for El Gringo drops Marcus off a gift. It's a female FGP.
Interesting.
Marcos doesn't want it. The man dropping it off, he's holding a rope that's being used as a leash. He just puts it down and drives away. He's like, you should want this. Basically, everybody was like, you should want this. So he has a cattle woman now.
Well, it's kind of like someone sent you steaks, but it was a cow. So it's also like a pretty inconvenient present.
That's true. It's not not the best form to give food in as a gift. Yeah.
What is that online steak delivery?
Steaks.com.
No, my aunt sends it to me sometimes. I feel like I don't want to call it Catalina Steaks, but I know that's not it. But it's like gift basket, but it's steaks.
Huh.
Okay. And they come like on dry ice, but they're like, I don't know, not alive. So I don't have to butcher them.
Yeah, so he is given a cattle woman that he is told is at the perfect age for breeding. I'm not sure how old she is. I don't remember if the book explicitly says. Everything that I've Googled has said about 15 to 20. Some people think she's 19. Marcos is older than this.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, like he's old enough to have worked, his way up in whatever like company.
He's old enough to think that he's better than anybody else that's ever existed and also have a dead child.
Well,
so he's
seems to be a little bit of a nepo baby.
Yeah.
Because his dad also worked in the business before him. So there's this difference in power because he's an older man and she is literally a younger woman who is not seen as human. She's nude. She walks on her knees. He looks in the fridge. He's like, what do I give her? They didn't give me any feed. He has beer, lemons, tomatoes, cucumbers, and leftover white rice.
What a fucking philosophy major fridge. Are you actually kidding?
He feeds the cold rice and some water to the head in the barn where he's keeping her. He doesn't warm it up. So that just shows to me that, like, even though he's like, oh, it's terrible to, like, look at these people as cattle, but yet you're not, like, warming up the rice.
Yeah, I think that's crazy. Also, it's Omaha steaks.
Omaha steaks.
I've heard of it.
I didn't know what it was.
It's like when you get gift baskets that have like summer sausage in it, like you're a king. My aunt sends me Omaha steaks sometimes, and it's kind of like you get like pork chops and steaks and stuff, but never a cow.
Are they actually good?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like if Schwann's was for like rich people.
Okay. Okay.
So
it's porch meat.
Porch meat.
Porch meat.
It is porch. It's
speaking of which,
we'll
tell you
break.
Some more after this porch meat.
Porch meat.
Woo! America's number one porch meat.
America's number one porch meat.
I'm glad that we all got to hear about that porch meat. Omaha Steaks somehow inserted their advertisement right into that break, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I wish.
Let us know if you heard an Omaha Steaks ad during that
ad break.
I would
like for it to be 1985 and also a podcast. I accept.
Speaking of Omaha snakes. Speaking of Omaha Steaks.
Lime, calcium, and rust. Limeway is a must.
Bridget.
So basically he brings her blankets. After a little while, because you're like, oh, he's a cattle now. There's a lot of other stuff that's happening.
Imagine you're just a dude. You're just living. Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
You're just a dude living, and then all of a sudden you have a cow, and you're like, I'm just thinking about like how that would interrupt my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'd be happy about this.
He does bring up, because he's like, I used to, when I'd go to this tannery and this and this, I'd just get a hotel room. And now he's like, I got to go home because I have the head,
the
female head.
It's like getting a dog and you don't realize what a strain it's going to. God, these metaphors just aren't working.
I get what you're saying, though. I think the biggest thing here is like, why not sell it?
Yeah.
Or give it away if that's ethically abhorrent to you. This guy can't be the only person in this whole entire world who's not like obsessed with eating human meat. I'm sure there's a place that if he wasn't a dirty, rotten slaughterhouse upper management worker that he would know about that he could bring this head to. I don't think that he's completely unlike other girls. Hot take.
Yeah, he makes it out like he's different than other girls, but...
I love an unreliable narrator, though. It's like reading Lolita for the first time, and people are like, oh, man, isn't that the book about pedophilia? And you're like, I mean, sort of, but it's really mostly the book about the most pathetic man I've ever read in my life.
So the first part... So, yeah, he's having to take care of this human woman.
So hard for him.
So he's going into, he goes out one night, he's wipes her down with a rag. He sees initials on her that certify she is first generation pure. There are 20 of them, one for each of her years at the breeding center. So, okay, so she is 20.
That's okay.
He moves on to her face and with his hand cleans the dirt stuck to it. He notices her long eyelashes and her eyes, which are a vague color, perhaps gray or green. So vague.
those are two very specific colors.
I'm very unsettled and upset.
She has a few scattered freckles.
I really don't like where this is going.
I don't like it when a man notices a woman's freckles at any time. It feels like a hate crime.
Even with the drops of rain falling hard, he can smell her.
No, I don't think you should.
Wild and fresh, the scent of jasmine.
This is like Nell. I'm feeling red flags like I did when I watched Nell.
She has straight hair, but it's tangled. He has to comb it carefully so it doesn't hurt her.
This is like Blue Lagoon.
When he's finished, he brings her to her feet and looks at her. There in the rain, he sees her. As fragile, as nearly translucent as perfect. He moves towards the smell of jasmine and without thinking, hugs her. Says she don't move or tremble. Her eyes are now definitely green. It does say that. Her eyes are green. He thinks definitely green.
As he writes this erotic fanfic about her.
He runs his hand over the mark on her forehead where she's been branded, then he kisses it, because he knows she suffered when they did that to her. Just as she suffered when they removed her vocal cords so she'd be more submissive, so she wouldn't scream when she was slaughtered. He strokes her neck. Now he's the one who trembles. Plot twist.
Actually rip my organs out of my own
this
throat.
Is also smut.
I think we all knew where this was going.
He removes his jeans and stands there naked. His breath quickens
again. Nell.
He continues to hug her as it rains down. What he wants to do is prohibited, but he does it anyway.
Do you think Sissy Spacek is still available for this? I'm gonna fucking jump off a cliff.
So he fucks his cattle.
Right. Well, and obviously we did all know that was coming. That's unfortunate. That's not what we ever like to see. But it is what happens every time. Was this written by Orison Scott Card? What the fuck?
I will say some of the stuff, this is a translated book. So I don't know with the, is it gray or green, if it was better in
also,
its original language.
Also, I respect that this was written by a woman. To be clear.
I forgot this was translated too.
I know.
Yes.
That she is accurately writing a man. I have no problem with the author in this situation. I am just disgusted by the accuracy.
He is thinking.
I'd like to throw myself off of a building.
He's the one shuddering. So he fucks her.
Of course he does.
Eventually he brings her into the house.
Right.
He puts clothes on her.
Mm-hmm. Does she cook for him?
He teaches her how to cook.
Oh, my God.
He teaches her how to cook.
Thank God. He teaches how else her would he eat?
How to do a lot of things. And the way that he describes her, like the way she looks at him, he just loves it. I also love the way that my dog looks at me.
Have you ever thought of fucking your dog?
Never.
Cool. I think that might be different for him.
But I do think he looks at her. It's weird because he's looking at her like a pet that he wants to fuck.
Well, it is
but
weird.
But he's not looking at her as a human.
Yeah, well, it is weird, Bridget, because that's not a way that normal people feel about anything.
No, yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you this right now. If you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, well, when I look at my pet, I want to fuck him. I think that you should call your therapist
or psychiatrist,
and I think that you should speak to them. That's genuinely not a roast. I think that you should have a conversation
with
a professional.
Please don't act on it.
Because that is not a regular way for anybody to behave.
Just get a piss kink.
Get a piss kink. And if your psychiatrist is wondering, what should I do? Recommend, well, this podcast I listened to said that I should instead get a piss kink. That is a much healthier kink for you.
Yeah.
What the hell?
So the way he describes her, and also I don't teach my dogs how to cook or my cat how to cook.
I mean, if I could teach my cat how to cook so that they could, like, I don't know, contribute to this household.
I'm still intrigued by the idea that you can get a therapist to give you a piss kink.
Well, clearly you've never been a woman going to anything.
It's
you
true.
Can go anywhere as a woman and be like, I'd like to make this sexual. And they're like, I was hoping you'd ask.
I was just waiting on it.
They were
you
got
dropped off
thought
at my house and you're actually cattle and you want to make it sexual?
Anyway, so I'm stressed.
Yeah, so he names her
happening?
Jasmine. So when
of
I was
how she smells?
Of how she smells.
I have to take a shower.
Ian, you're a man.
Go on.
What was that prompt for?
Are there any more Four Locos? I don't know if I can take this.
So.
That was a prompt out of thin air to comment on.
How dare you call me a man?
And I'm just wondering.
Okay.
Would you fuck her?
No. Jesus Christ, no. Okay, if someone gives me a cow, I'm going to be upset for all the reasons that we've talked about before. I'm not going to fuck the cow.
I think that's so fair.
I resent the cow.
Yeah. Well, so now there's the difference.
Yeah.
It's good for him personally to resent the cow. That really gets him in there. Because he also, I have a theory.
What's your theory?
My hand is up for our viewers who can't see. He already resents his wife for being unable to produce an heir that could live. And I believe that he blames his wife for their son dying. So he's used to resenting women. And so when a woman is dropped off to him as an Omaha steak, he says, fuck, I think makes sense to fuck. And then he does, because all he knows how to do is resent women like his wife and his sister, and all the women that I assume came before them.
The woman who takes care of his father, he's like, yeah, she's nice, but she's annoying.
Wow, like, I bet she fucking is. It must be so annoying how she takes care of his father, and he doesn't, and also his bitch sister he hates doesn't. Nobody does but this woman that he thinks is annoying.
Okay. So now we are going to put the rest of this story behind our Patreon wall. If you are interested in becoming one of our patrons and hearing the ending of this story, be sure to check out patreon.com/edgingthepodcast. Alrighty, so let's see how this ends.
Her tenacity.
There
we go.
I feel really good about our relationship right now.
Let's go past morals here.
I wish she would shoot him as soon as she walked through the door. That's my fantasy. Well.
Rough.
Hate a man. Not a fan of any man. Dislike. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. This author is fantastic, especially if you're wanting to read something bleak, but that last sentence of the book literally is what just kind of made me the
come
biggest
apart
fan
at
of
the
this
seams.
Book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like I will be thinking about that for weeks.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even have to have read this book. And it's not disturbing in a way, I don't know how to describe this, but it's not disturbing in a way that's off-putting. Because it feels very well told.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other stuff going on. Like I said, human cattle's being hunted for sport, all this sort of stuff. There's like illegal things going on. He talks about visiting the butcher.
Mm.
And I said cutlet earlier because there's a special cutlet.
Oh, okay.
It's a type of cut.
I get the cutlet reference now. Mm. Yes.
But yeah, all of this is going on while he's just describing this, like, pet owner feeling he's having for Jasmine. But he's also fucking her, but she's also pregnant. And then all of a sudden she is nothing to him. Which means she was never anything at all.
And, like,
and that's why I can't fucking stand this dude.
But, like, here's the thing, though. It's like, you can read this whole dystopian novel and get to the end of it and have whatever opinions you have about this world. But in, like, our real world that we live in, that's, like, a regular experience for women who are considered people. Like, that feels like the author was being very pointed in the way that she was writing the story. And everything else can be happening in the world to kind of, like, lull us into this false sense of security. But the reality is that it doesn't feel like a fantastical story.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's so uncomfortable. Woof.
Very bleak.
Very incredibly bleak. That's the shit I like to read.
I have to pee so bad.
So, basically, that's an episode.
Yeah.
Should
we rate?
How many locos do you all... First of all, how many locos do you all rate Marcos?
Oh, like negative 24 out of 24. Hey,
no locos.
Zero, as many few locos as is possible to give a person.
The story itself.
24 out of 24.
I think I'm sticking with 18, actually. It's a really well-told story, but it's not my kind of story.
Mm-hmm. Understandable.
You know what I'm saying?
Mine is 24 out of 24 locoses. Mm-hmm. This is probably one of my favorite books that I've ever read.
It's one of my favorite books that I've ever had described to me.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want to do for you. We want to give you your favorite book that you read, but we also want to give you your favorite book that somebody else describes to you.
Especially if you're like a scaredy cat.
That is the edging promise.
Yes.
The edging promise.
We promise to edge you. Anyways.
Speaking of edging, I have to pee right now or I'll pee myself.
Brooke is going to pee so she doesn't bring forth the pith king.
The pith kink.
I sound like you with your tooth missing.
I know.
What if you sounded like that? Ian's got a tooth. It's not missing.
I had some dental work done. Yeah. Okay.
Pith kink. Anyways,
right.
We love y'all.
Well, this is Ian.
This is Bridget.
Brooke's taking a piss. And this is Edging.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.